October 4th, 1980 was Juno's 100th birthday, and the city was in the mood to party. The Coast Guard cutter Boutwell was in town, up from Seattle, to help with the celebration. The bars were full of Coasties, and Sitkin Doris Bailey was in Juno and remembers how her husband, Roy, first learned that the party was over.
Boat started tooting blasts on the horn, and Roy jumped out of bed and said, "Oh my gosh, every Coast Guard person is being told to go back to the ship. All leave is canceled."
That was around 1 a.m. in the morning. The Boutwell's captain, Lee Crum, was scheduled to be the Centennial Parade Grand Marshal. He was enjoying himself in the Mendenhall Valley Tavern when he was called to the phone.
I went up and got the microphone from the band and said, "Anybody from the Boutwell in here, get yourselves downstairs. We're heading back to the ship. We have a cruise ship on fire." We had people actually sitting in the trunks of cars with their legs hanging out the back, getting them back to the ship.
The Juno Police and Volunteer Fire Department went to every bar rousting out crew members. Seaman Dan Long was on the ship helping load the crew back on board.
One guy take the arms, one guy take the weight, haul them board and dump them on the flight deck.
Yes.
Those that couldn't walk under their own power.
But in 2 hours, the Boutwell was ready to sail with only 9 crew members missing. In Sitka, the Wood Rush was also underway, and 2 helicopters from Air Station Sitka were heading to the ship. On board the Prince Adam, the fire spread. She was dead in the water. The captain gave the order to abandon ship. John Graham was the ship's lecturer.
In the beginning, the seas were relatively calm. We were put in the lifeboats in the middle of the night. It was kind of an adventure. People did sing along some old campfire songs.
At daybreak, the helicopters started hoisting passengers. They ferried the survivors to the Exxon Williamsburg, which heard the SOS. Fortunately, the tanker had a helipad and was fully loaded with crude oil, making it stable in the rising seas. Every few trips, the helicopters had to refuel, so they carried their passengers to Yakutat. Pete Torres was on the crew of one of the Kodiak choppers.
The people had been sitting cramped in a lifeboat for up to 10 to 12 hours, and by the time they got into the helicopter, they couldn't get themselves up out of the basket, and we would actually have to pick them up and actually help them to move back to the back of the helicopter. There weren't enough troop seats in the helicopter, so after a while, a lot of passengers would have to actually sit on the deck in a pile. I think on our last run, we had up to 16 survivors on our helicopter.
The Prince Adam passengers who flew to safety may have been the lucky ones. As the day wore on, the weather deteriorated. John Graham says this is when survivors in the lifeboats began to feel desperate.
Finally, the typhoon hit us full force, winds gusting up to 60 knots, 30-foot seas, and we were all hypothermic. We were all seasick. At about 5 o'clock, the storm was so bad that the helicopters couldn't fly anymore. So our only hope was that there was something out there on the sea that might rescue us.
Graham's boat was eventually found by the Boutwell. She had arrived from Juno and began taking on survivors. It wasn't easy. First, they sent a launch to transfer survivors from the lifeboats to the ship. That didn't work so well, Dan Long recalls.
We went out and got to the first lifeboat. Well, the crew from the Prince Adam, they were just panicked. We wanted to take the elderly on board first. They were climbing over the elderly and diving into our boat because they were so afraid. It was just like this total mayhem. And so our boat quickly filled up, and we couldn't get all the elderly off the lifeboat.
Instead, the launch towed the lifeboat to the Boutwell. But most were not able to climb the 40-foot Jacob's ladder to the ship. Their hands were cold, and they could not get a grip on the rungs.
So then we sent a man down with a horse collar, and then we just manually, hand over hand, hauled them up one by one.
Using a hand winch. And that's the way Boutwell brought all the survivors from the remaining lifeboats on board. Or so they thought. Lieutenant Colonel Dave Brisky, the pilot of an Air Force C-130, was unwilling to call it a day.
I called the Coast Guard, and I said, "What's the status of the mission?" And they said, "Well, everybody's been picked up. We're closing the mission down." And I said, "Are you sure you got everybody picked up?" And they said, "Yes, everybody's picked up." I said, "Okay, so last I heard, the Air Force helicopter, the boat that they were picking up people from, had 2 of our PJs, or pararescue men, and about 18 to 20 people from the ship. Can you confirm that those people were picked up?" "Yeah, they're all picked up." And I said, "Well, give me the names of the 2 PJs, and then I know you got them." They insisted that they were going to close the mission. I called Rescue Coordination Center back at Elmendorf, and I said, "Hey, I don't think they got everybody picked up."
Brisky was right. The Boutwell and Woodrush sailed search patterns in the area where the lifeboat was last reported. Just before 2 a.m., the Boutwell found the missing lifeboat and hauled its passengers on board. The mission was closed, but for the residents of Yakutat, Sitka, and Valdez, the rescue on the Princeton was just beginning. Reporting from the 35th anniversary reunion of the Princeton rescue in Seattle, I'm Rich McClear.